Hello and welcome to Moments in Time. Moments in Time is a section of the Hot Corner where we look at a singular event, a play, an at-bat, a game that was memorable or career-defining. Normally, this section is a read-only thing, but today we have a special opportunity to present a podcast with Larry Durker, former Astros pitcher, manager, and broadcaster. Larry pitched a no-hitter for Houston in 1976, but 50 years ago, in September 1969, he pitched what he felt was an even better game, though he lost a possible no-hitter with two out in the ninth inning. We'll talk about that game and its significance to Larry and the Houston Astros franchise. Larry, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Jim.
Let's set the scene a little bit. In 1969, the Astros start 4-20, and the 20th loss was a no-hitter by the Reds' Jim Maloney. So Don Wilson returned fire for the Astros the next night, and his no-hitter seemed to be the spark that sort of turned your season around. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it's accurate. I think we won 10 games in a row after that and had another 10-game winning streak later in the year.
Yes, you guys were 20-6 in May because the no-hitter was the last game in April, I believe, and you guys went 13-1 at home right after that. So momentum definitely switched.
And we had a lot of good young talent in 69, perhaps not enough to win a championship, but by September we at least had a chance.
Right. And in 1969, you were in your sixth season. You were a veteran instead of that young 17-year-old kid who came up in 1964.
Well, that's for sure. You had to learn pretty quickly if you were a starting pitcher back then, because they expected a little bit more than they expect now in terms of the number of innings you pitch. And so even though I was still pretty young, I had a lot of innings behind me, and I'd gotten to the point where I felt like strategically I knew how to work my way through a lineup.
Right. Despite the team's poor start, speaking of innings pitched, you had career highs in wins with 20, innings pitched with 305, the only time you broke 300 innings, 20 complete games, and your lowest full season ERA at 2.33. How did it all come together for you that season that made that one such a special one for you personally?
It started, I think, in 1967 in San Pedro de Macorís in the Dominican Republic. I went down there basically to try to learn to do the things that I'd seen veteran pitchers do, and that was to change speeds and throw breaking balls behind in the count, and to pitch around hitters with a base open where I perhaps had a better shot at the next batter, to do the little things that guys that have been around for a while were capable of doing, and I had a great year down there and was able to do those things, and we won a championship, actually the only championship team I was ever on as a professional. When I came back in 68, I was better but still not quite enough good enough at doing those things. In 1969, we got a catcher, Johnny Edwards, in a trade. And we continued to work on those things during spring training, and I really got into a good groove, and I stayed in that groove mostly all year long. And I think it was a combination of experience and having a catcher that I depended on and who seemed to be able to pick up on the vibration of what I was thinking about doing, what I wanted to throw, and it just, it got to the point where I think we both felt like game after game, inning after inning, it was going to be hard for the other teams to score.
Edwards was really important to your career and to your confidence when you went to the mound, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really was. And he was, while he was more a veteran player than I was, he wasn't as stubborn as some catchers I'd thrown to before he got there. A lot of catchers, especially if they're catching a young guy that doesn't have a lot of experience, feel like they know what the pitcher should throw better than he does. And Johnny wasn't like that. He basically allowed me to call my own game, the way he worked when he felt like maybe I wasn't making the best choices was to talk to me between innings and say, you know, I remember one game in San Diego, how come you're not throwing your fastball? Well, I don't think like I have a very good fastball. Well, how many have they hit? How many have they hit hard? Well, not any yet. Well, start throwing it more. It's good, whether you know it or not. That was his way. You know, it wasn't like to keep putting the fastball sign down time after time and then to come out to the mound and tell me what to do. And, you know, just that slight difference in the way we communicated, I think made me feel more important, smarter, better, whatever. It gave me confidence.
You've also mentioned the confidence you had when he would put the breaking ball sign down with two strikes, that you had every confidence that you could throw it in the dirt and he would block it.
Right, exactly. Not only with two strikes, but with two strikes and a man on third.
Right.
Which really puts the, he puts the pressure right on himself because he would call for a slider and then he would tap the dirt behind home plate. Meaning he wanted me to throw it in the dirt and get the hitter to chase it, trying to strike him out, which obviously with a guy on third, especially with less than two outs, a strikeout is really important. And back then, I most pitchers didn't really pitch for strikeouts. Yeah, there was a Sandy Koufax, and Nolan Ryan was starting to come into his own as a strikeout pitcher. But for most pitchers, any kind of out would do. And if you get a guy out with a sinker on the first pitch, it was better than having to throw five pitches to strike him out. But it wasn't quite as big an issue as these days. But when there was a man on third and less than two outs, it was the sure way of preventing that runner from scoring.
So your relationship builds. Things work pretty well. You've got 19 wins by September 13th. The Astros are only 3.5 games back of the Braves. You're playing the Braves in Atlanta, so there was plenty on the line for you and the team in this particular game.
There was everything on the line, and I think that's why it's the game I'm most proud of. I never got a chance to pitch in postseason. That would have been even more pressure. But as far as the way my career went and the teams I played for, it was – the most pressure-packed game of all, because if we could beat the Braves, we'd only be 2.5 back. There were, I think, probably 3 weeks left to play, so we really had a shot to win the division that year. And as you mentioned, I had 19 wins already, so I was pitching personally for my 20th win. And as a teammate and a leader of the pitching staff, I was pitching to keep us in the race and move us forward. So it was, you know, I felt going into that game like I had to win it. And it was important. I guess to say, you know, every game is important. And back then we there was no free agency. So every year was a 1-year contract, which made every game even more important. But this particular game was critical. And it probably, I really didn't pitch in that many games that were that important during my career.
And you're facing a tough lineup there with Alou, Cepeda, Rico Carty, Hank Aaron, and others. Were you keying in on anyone in particular, or are you just trying to navigate a pretty tough lineup there?
Yeah, I wasn't going to go out there and try to pitch a no-hitter. I was going to try to go out there and pitch as well as I had been pitching down the stretch. And, yes, it was a tough lineup. Fortunately, most of those guys all those guys you mentioned were right-handed hitters, and that was helpful because I was a right-handed pitcher. But, you know, some of them were in the Hall of Fame, and some that weren't, like Rico Carty, might have been even better as far as being an offensive player.
Right.
So, yeah, that was, to me, it wasn't necessarily pitch a shutout or pitch a no-hitter. It was just try to keep the game close and give us a chance to win it. So, I mean, I would have been happy to pitch a 1 or 2 run game if we'd won it. But as it turned out, they hit the ball to the fielders, and I did better.
And you guys were facing Phil Niekro, I mean, a 20-game winner himself, and a knuckleball pitcher to boot, that he was known to mess up a lineup for days after he pitched, just trying to deal with that knuckleball.
Yes, and that was an issue in this particular game, as it was in a game I pitched earlier in my career in New York, where I had a no-hitter going into the ninth, but we didn't have any runs. So if you're on the road, you pitch the bottom of the ninth and finish the no-hitter, but the game's not over because it's still nothing to nothing. So you have to go back out and attempt to try to pitch the no-hitter. In that game in New York, I gave up the hit in the ninth. In this game in Atlanta, I got the first two guys out. It wasn't a perfect game. I walked a couple of guys. But Felix Mignon chopped a ground ball in the hole at short. And our shortstop, Dennis Menke, wasn't one of those power arm guys. So he tried to grab it and throw quickly. And the throw was in the dirt. And I think Mignon probably would have been safe anyway, but the first baseman dropped it. It was scored a hit. I felt like it was a legitimate hit. I also felt like there were shortstops in the league that probably could have planted and thrown him out. So it was that close to pitching a no-hitter for my 20th win and to get, closer to the Braves in the race. But just like the game in New York, we didn't have any runs off Phil Niekro. So just completing 9 no-hit innings wasn't going to get us the win. It wasn't going to get me my 20th win. We had to go on into extra innings.
Did want to ask you if you got a sense as that game was going along, did you think that one run would take that game?
I don't think so. It's hard to really remember what your thoughts are in a game. I know my thoughts were going into the game that it was a critical game, and I generally speaking, my thoughts were in any game that you can't expect to pitch a shutout, but you just try to keep your team in the game. But to think, at some juncture within the game, did I think one run would win it? I kind of doubt it. Maybe in the eighth or ninth inning, but it's hard to remember.
I wanted to ask it also. You touched on this. What it's like to go out in the bottom of the ninth on the road, knowing, look, I might get these next three guys out, but I've really got to get 6 more guys out to get the no-hitter and win this game.
Yes, that's true. And it wasn't the first time. I had a game like that in the Astrodome against Steve Carlton. And in that game, it wasn't nothing to nothing. It was 1-1. But, after getting him out in the ninth, you've got to go back out and attempt. And, in that one, I ended up going 11. In this one, Atlanta, I ended up going 12. I don't think you'd see that anymore because I gave up a hit in the ninth, and so the manager wasn't going to leave me in the game to give me a shot at the no-hitter. It was gone. He left me in the game because he thought I had the best chance of putting a zero on the board in the 10th, which I did. But
right,
that just doesn't happen anymore.
Niekro was pinch hit for in the 11th inning. Don Mayberry pinch hits for you in the 13th. I mean, you had given up a couple of other hits by then, but still, you weren't hit for until the 13th inning, and you guys score a couple of runs, go up 2-0, but your closer, Fred Gladding, couldn't hang on to it, and Bob Aspromonte ends up winning the game on a bases-loaded walk. So it's a 3-2 loss when not so long earlier things might have been different.
I think if there was ever a game in my career that I could call a turning point, that was it. Because with a 2-0 lead and Fred Gladding on the mound, I believe that everyone on the field and on the bench believed that we were going to win that game and close to within 2.5. And then losing it, it was just like a kick in the gut. And now we're 4.5 out after expending that much effort to finally get the runs, to finally win the game. The Braves, from that point on, only lost a few games the whole rest of the year, and the Astros, from that point on, only won a few games the whole rest of the year. It was just as if that one inning changed the pennant race.
Yes, because I checked the records, and the Astros went 6-14 after that game, and the Braves went 13-4 and won the division by 3 games. So sometimes that stuff can be overstated, but it doesn't look like it was overstated in this case.
At least with regard to those two teams. And I should mention that even had we beaten the Braves in that game and close to within 2.5, there were three other teams in the race. There were five teams in the division, and the only team that was more than 3.5 games out was the Padres. So it was up for grabs for anyone to win it, but the Braves eventually did. And so winning that game, you know, put them back one more and us up one more, and whether that changes momentum or not, nobody will ever know.
It also didn't help. I checked today. You guys were 3-15 against the Braves that season. If you guys had just broken even against the Braves, you would have won the division alone or right there, just in head-to-head games.
Oddly enough, in that same year, 1969, the Mets beat the Braves in the playoffs, and the Mets had a winning record against every team in the National League that year except for the Astros. We beat them 10 out of 12 times. So I guess that goes under that thing that we throw everything under the same umbrella. That's baseball.
When you look at the season records of those teams and who they did well against and who they didn't, it doesn't always even out. And if X team and Y had played in the playoffs, yes, history might have certainly have been different just based on how those teams compared to each other all year long.
That's the way things happen. It's more the rule than the exception.
Yes. And it should be noted also, just in fairness, you did get your 20th win in your next start, September 17th against the Giants. Beat a guy named Gaylord Perry 2-1, and Jim Boughton pitched a two-inning save for you in that one.
That was an interesting year. I didn't throw anywhere near as well in that game against the Giants as I had against the Braves, but I still was motivated because it was, you know, it was, I had 19 wins, and actually they asked me if I wanted an extra day because I pitched 12 innings, and I said no. So maybe I needed an extra day in terms of how hard I was throwing or something like that, but obviously 7 innings and 1 run isn't all that bad. And I got my 20th win, and Boughton, who wrote ball 4 after that season, was actually an excellent pitcher for us that year. We picked him up about halfway through from the Seattle Pilots, the team that became the Milwaukee Brewers. The Pilots were only up there in Seattle for a year or two. But Jim was, you know, not doing that well there. He got over with us, and he kind of, I guess he, you know, felt the excitement of a pennant race, which he'd been in before as a young pitcher with the Yankees.
Right.
And so he pitched really well for us, and he got that save. And he ended up striking out more hitters that season for us than he pitched innings. And we had three pitchers on that team, Don Wilson, Tom Griffin, maybe Jim Ray and Bowden. We had three or four pitchers who had more strikeouts than innings, which was really unusual back then.
You did finish the season with the 20 wins. The Astros had their first at least 500 season. Still in all, I guess there was a feeling of what might have been.
Yeah, it was a disappointing season because after starting 4-20 and getting over 500 and close to first place was really stimulating. And then the letdown ending was kind of like the slow start. We just weren't quite good enough, not quite mature enough. It was basically a pretty young team, and we just didn't have enough. But it was exciting nonetheless because it was the first time that any of us had experienced a pennant race, and little did we know that we would never experience it again. The Astros all the way till 1980. Before they won the division, 1979, they were in the race. But it was a long time coming, and part of it was some of the young players that were in that pennant race for us ended up getting traded. Probably the most important was Joe Morgan, who went to the Reds and became an MVP of the league a couple of times. I think back then that team we had, had we just kept it together and not made any trades, that we probably would have been in some other pennant races and maybe won one.
Appreciate you taking some time to talk with us about that year and about this game in particular. That was quite a moment in time, wasn't it?
Well, Jim, I never get tired of talking about that game for all the reasons that we've just discussed, but it also reminds me of something Don Larson said when a reporter asked him if he ever got tired of talking about his perfect game in the World Series, and Larson said, no, why would I? It's fun to talk about your best game.
You think that was your best game, considering everything that was riding
on it? Yeah, I think
so.
Definitely. You know, not as many strikeouts as I had in other games, but considering the quality of the lineup and the importance of the game in the pennant race, I would say, yeah, definitely, that was the best game I pitched. I certainly had better stuff and better control than I had in the no-hitter I pitched against the Expos in the Dome. So that was it.
It's nice that you still have that moment and that you're proud of that, and appreciate your time today, Larry.
Okay, thanks, Jim.